For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Doug Jones has sealed a dramatic victory in the Alabama Senate race, the first Democrat to win that state for 25 years. He defeated the favorite, Republican Roy Moore, whose campaign had been dogged by multiple allegations of sexual misconduct. John Beaver reports from Washington, D.C.
A jubilant Doug Jones celebrating a stunning political upset in the traditionally Republican state.
I have always believed that the people of Alabama had more in common than to divide us.
His opponent, Roy Moore, addressed supporters, but refused to concede defeat.
But the votes are still coming in, and we're looking at that.
Moore's campaign grabbed national attention when multiple women came forward, accusing him of sexual misconduct dating back decades when Moore was in his 30s and his accusers were teenagers. The result also cast doubt on the popular influence of President Trump, who strongly endorsed Moore's failed bid for the Senate.
The UK government could lose a key vote later on its flagship Brexit legislation. Rebels from Prime Minister Theresa May's Conservative Party want to amend the bill so MPs get a vote on any Brexit deal, which could send negotiators back to the table with the EU. Some pro-Brexit MPs believe this could lead to attempts to block the UK's exit from the EU altogether. The UK Prime Minister hopes to convince MPs in her party not to back the amendment, and Mrs. May says the key vote on Brexit has already happened.
Actually, this Parliament gave that decision about our membership of the European Union to the people of this country.
Yeah.
It is the people of this country who have voted to leave the European Union, and this government will deliver for the people of this country.
Yeah.
The US Congress is expected to let a deadline on reimposing sanctions on Iran pass this week. The deadline was triggered in October when US President Donald Trump refused to certify that Tehran is complying with the 2015 nuclear deal. As our Washington correspondent Giles Gibson reports, a decision on the future of the deal now bounces back to the White House.
All the indications from Capitol Hill here in Washington are that no lawmakers from the Republican Party, Donald Trump's own party, or from the Democrats, the opposition, will be bringing forward any sort of legislation to actually reimpose sanctions on Iran. So essentially what this does is it kicks the future of the deal back across Washington from the US Congress back to the White House and Donald Trump's office, the Oval Office.
It's reported Walt Disney will soon confirm a deal to buy 21st Century Fox's entertainment wing for in the region of $60 billion. Comcast dropped out of the race on Monday. It would include the purchase of 20th Century Fox's film studio and Star and Sky satellite broadcasters in Asia, Europe and the UK. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Wednesday's programme, December 13th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen, you already know that. We're live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and TuneIn Radio. Good to have your company this Wednesday. Got a very interesting programme, I think, lined up for you over the course of the next couple of hours. Let's have at it then.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, about 3 weeks ago, former CIA officer Robert David Steele got in touch with me and he said, Richie, you might want to speak to my friend Joachim Hagopian. And I had a look at Joachim and we definitely want to speak with him. He's a West Point graduate and former US Army officer who's worked as a clinical psychologist and with abused children for 25 years or more. He's got a new book out called Pedophilia and Empire, Satan, Sodomy and the Deep State. He joins me in the second hour live from Bali. It'll be like 4 a.m. there tomorrow morning when he speaks with me, Joachim. Looking forward to that. And before that, the author, the academic and RT political commentator Jean Bricmont joins the programme. Jean believes that the EU army is not being built to safeguard all of us, but rather to fight future wars of aggression. We'll chat about that. We'll also chat about the reality that the United Kingdom will probably never leave the European Union. We'll talk about democracy in the 21st century and more. Jean Bricmont joins the programme this hour live from Belgium. Coming up for 5 past the hour. Good-o. Keep davidicke.com handy if you're listening with a laptop or a computer nearby, because a lot of very interesting stories on that website every day. In fact, I'll refer to a couple of them in a few minutes' time. Tweet at Richie Allen Show with any comment on tonight's programme. I'll be glad to hear from you as usual, you know that. So without further ado, further, my old elocution teacher wouldn't be too happy with that. Further. Without further ado, let's have a look. Now, there's a big story brewing in the UK here. You probably know all about that. There will be a vote shortly in the House of Commons on an amendment that Tory rebels and the Labour Party want to make to the EU withdrawal bill. Shall I tell you a little bit about that? Now, look, I gave you a break last night and the night before, but as the kids say, shit be getting serious now. Not that I have ever been down with the kids in my life, even when I was a kid, but shit be getting real now. Right, enough of the silly gags. So the Labour Party and Conservative rebels led by former Attorney General Dominic Grieve, they want to amend the EU withdrawal bill. What is the withdrawal bill, Rich? I hear nobody cry because you're sick of it. Well, the EU withdrawal bill will effectively repeal the 1972 European Communities Act. I know I've talked about this a lot, but we've got to refresh and keep you up to speed on this, lest you just get totally tired and bogged down and you get drowned in the detail. So repeal the European Communities Act, which took Britain into the EU. And when that happened, of course, in 1972, it meant that European law took precedence over UK law. So that will end. It will also end the power of the European Court of Justice in the UK. This is the EU withdrawal bill, the government's bill. Now, all existing EU legislation will be copied immediately into domestic UK law to ensure a smooth transition on the day after Brexit. And then Parliament can amend, keep laws it likes, kick out laws it doesn't like, and all of that. The government says it wants to avoid a black hole in the statute book and avoid disruption to businesses and individual citizens as we leave the European Union. But Labour and Tory rebels, they want to amend the EU repeal bill. They want to add in a clause, a stipulation, that there must be a legal guarantee that Parliament gets to vote on whether the final deal is ratified or not. Ultimately, they, Labour and Tory rebels, want the rights to vote down Brexit entirely. And they're going to vote on the amendment at some stage. It should be happening now. But I don't have a 24-hour news channel screen open in front of me. I suppose I could open one, just to keep an eye on it. In the meantime, while we're waiting for that result on that amendment, Nigel Evans, Conservative MP, told Sky News an hour ago what he really thinks is going on. We might be inclined to agree with Nigel Evans.
Well, I think what the meaningful vote is for some of them is that when the deal comes back to this Parliament, that they believe that they'll have the opportunity to amend it. Well, you can't have that. I heard
Yvette
Cooper,
even if it's a terrible deal, you can't have that.
Listen, I've got every faith in Theresa May that she is not going to bring back a terrible deal.
But just in case,
we've already said that.
Just in case it is a bad deal.
No, because my belief is that some of my colleagues will use any and every opportunity to try and delay us exiting the European Union. Yvette Cooper basically said that, oh, we should be able to ask for an extension on our Article 50 commitment and timetable if we're not happy. I mean, I smell a rat. I smell a rat completely that it's not a case that they are not happy with the deal. They're not happy with the result of the referendum. And we have got a commitment. This was the largest democratic vote that has ever taken place in this country. And we gave a commitment that we would follow through with that. So if they're not happy with the deal, then they can vote it down. Or if they're happy with the deal, they can vote it up. But what they can't do is prevent the United Kingdom from leaving the European Union.
Yeah, but it's what they want to do. We understand that. It's what they want to do. Yvette Cooper, orange on a toothpick. She's been speaking a lot today. We won't hear from her, though. I won't subject you to it. So they want to be able to block it in Parliament at the end. We spoke about this before when we said, well, let them vote against the deal if they want. But all that should entail is that the deal isn't signed and we leave without a deal. But you see, these people want this legally binding thing where if they say no to the deal, it actually stops the process of leaving the European Union, you see. They want to be able to block it effectively. But interestingly enough today, Nigel Farage, the former leader of the UK Independence Party, he was in Brussels this morning and he made some very good points. And the points he made were that Theresa May has effectively bent over and prostrated herself at the feet of the European Union in recent weeks and is actually working on a deal that kind of keeps us in the European Union. Even if in name we're out, we would actually still be in. And Farage is right. May is doing the job of the Remainers for them. This was Farage today. Two very interesting sound bites from him.
I don't think I've ever heard so little criticism of the United Kingdom in this chamber in all my life. And I guess that doesn't really take much working out, does it? Monsieur Barnier said earlier that there were key areas upon which he wasn't prepared to make many concessions. Well, you didn't need to, sir, because you were up against Theresa May. And she was and she was all for making as many concessions as she possibly could, including agreeing a ludicrous bill of up to 40 billion sterling for us to have the right to leave, a continued role for the European Court of Justice, and in line with that, family reunions that mean, frankly, open-door immigration from the European Union is going to continue for years to come, and almost bizarrely, a commitment for ongoing regulatory alignment. It's as if, even though we're leaving, effectively the British government wants to keep us in some form of single market relationship. So I'm not surprised you're all very pleased with her. Theresa the appeaser has given in on virtually everything. But as an observation, in an exercise of power, it's fascinating. Whether we like or dislike the European Union, we can't deny the power that it's got. Because you managed to make a British Prime Minister leave Downing Street in the middle of the night, fly to Brussels to go and forge an agreement with unelected bureaucrats based in Brussels. I mean, it's a form of ritual humiliation which she was prepared to put herself through. She has danced to your tune all the way through this. You must be very, very pleased indeed.
Yes, she's doing the job of the Remainers, is May, and she's basically undercut her Brexit Secretary, David Davis. No doubt about that, as Farage said, heading off out to Brussels in the dead of the night when she was summoned by the unelected bureaucrats, conceding ground on migration, conceding ground on the single market. It's exactly what these people wanted. He's absolutely right. Now, I understand around about 7:15 UK time, which is around about 2.5 minutes away from now, we will have a result on Dominic Grieve's amendment. It's going to be very interesting, this. More from Farage, because he wasn't finished. Let's hear what Nigel Farage had to say.
And now we enter into what perhaps may be the biggest deception yet played on the British public. She is seeking a transition phase. And there are one or two comments here about whether the Brits will get that phase. Well, of course they will, because we're volunteering to go on paying the membership fee, to accepting all the existing rules, all the new rules. We will effectively, once transition is granted, have left the European Union at the end of March 2019 in name only. And if that transition phase lasts up until the next general election, there is a real possibility that a new incoming British government stroke coalition could sign us up to the single market and the customs union forever. So I do understand why many in this place feel encouraged by the performance of our Prime Minister, and I can assure you increasingly millions who voted for Brexit are feeling frustrated, perhaps even now moving to the point of anger. It's the same story across the whole of the West. The aspirations of the people and the aspirations of our political leaders and class are in a very, very different place. I fear Brexit at some point in the future may need to be refought all over again.
No doubt about it. It will be refought over and over again. And I was asked again today by a listener, and I've been asked this for about a year and a half, you know, the question of double, triple, quadruple bluff. I don't know. When the referendum result came in last year, and I didn't expect the Leave side of that referendum to win, of course, was happy with the referendum result, but I didn't expect it. And I did talk about it when listeners suggested that the vote was rigged for Leave, perversely, in a fiendish scheme by the hidden hand, the unknown, the unknowables behind these bureaucrats, that they wanted to get a Leave vote so that they could use the two-year process to actually bind the UK even closer to the European Union and the army and all of that, while putting down rebellions in other countries. And of course, anything is possible. I don't claim to know everything, but I've seen no evidence of that. You know, Farage, whatever you think of him, has always been anti-European Union. He used to come on my radio shows in Spain almost on a weekly basis, before he was well known. And people listened to him. He needed, he provided advice for people, you know, people who were devastated by wages falling, by jobs going to Eastern European migrants, public service problems. There was massive anger, and they turned to Farage. And David Cameron had to deal with that and gave the green light to the referendum. That's how I see it. But anything is possible. But I don't know. We give these people too much credit sometimes, I think. We give people too much credit. Now, it's beginning to look like, according to the BBC, that Theresa May might survive this amendment, and that the proposed amendment by the rebel MP, former Attorney General Dominic Grieve, might not succeed because some Tory rebels have indicated at the last minute they've had a change of heart. People like Paul Masterton and George Freeman, apparently, have decided that they're going to trust May and give her the benefit of the doubt, and on that they're going to abstain. So it might not be the result that everybody was saying this afternoon. More abstentions, apparently. We'll have a result in a couple of minutes. So we will, at least that's what they're telling us. Anyway, here's an interesting bit of audio for you. Here's an interesting bit of audio. Richard Dearlove is a former head of MI6, and he has told BBC's Newsnight programme that terrorism does not present a systemic threat to the United Kingdom. And he said the media has overreacted to terror incidents. Now, he ran MI6 from 1999 until 2004. That's a good 13 years since he's been in the job. Presumably, he still gets briefed. So he's given his first ever broadcast interview. It's very unusual for these spooks, especially at the very top, to come out and speak to the media. But he has done, and we've got a little snippet of what he said. Terrorism isn't a systematic or systemic threat, even I should say systemic, to the UK. What am I doing there? Richard Dearlove.
Chances of getting caught up in a terrorist attack, even when the terrorist attack is quite high, are relatively low. The problem is that when attacks happen, they're shocking, catastrophic, and of course you get a massive media reaction to them.
Too much of a media reaction?
I'm not blaming the media for it. You know, the world in which we live, it's inevitable.
It's what the audiences are talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, we need to keep a sense of proportion about what we're dealing with. I mean, I don't think terrorism in its current form presents a systemic threat to the nation. It presents the possibility of horrible happenings, which we are learning how to deal with.
Mm. That interview in its entirety will be broadcast at 10:30 p.m. tonight on
when
BBC Two. Yeah, I should have pressed pause there. Interesting stuff, that. Much will be made of that, I suppose. There will be those who will say you can't trust a former head of MI6 to tell you the time of day, that there is a systemic threat of terrorism to the country so long as migrants are coming into the country from Middle Eastern zones and areas that have been destroyed by Western intervention. There will be those who say he's talking through his backside, and there will be others who say, well, yeah, we've always believed the threat of terrorism has been exaggerated. So the breaking news is then that MPs have voted by the margin of 309 to 305 to defeat the government and pass the amendment in the name of Dominic Grieve, which would require the final deal with the European Union to be approved by statute passed by Parliament. This amendment will become part of the bill and MPs move to another vote. That's very, very interesting. Even at the last minute, some of those rebels were pulling back and saying that they would abstain or that they would change and they would support May. The Labour Party must be doing cartwheels of joy. So must the Tory Party rebels and all the other tyrants in the country, the Tony Blairs, the Alistair Campbells, Vince Cable, all the rest of them, Nick Clegg, everybody working hard to prevent the UK, leaving the European Union. Well, they're very happy today because Grieve's amendment to the EU withdrawal bill has been passed and means that the final deal with the European Union must be approved by statute passed by Parliament. And what these people want is they want the ability to say no to that final deal. However, no doesn't mean that we leave without a deal. No means that we don't leave. That's where this is going. So this is significant breaking news on Wednesday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. I'll let you chew the fat over that one, and I'll take a very quick break. When we come back, I'll be joined by my first guest. He'll be live from Brussels. It's Jean Bricmont, and you don't want to miss what he has to say. We will be talking European Union and more with him in around about 3 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Back in three.
Clear mind, ability to handle stressful situations, and make better and wiser decisions. The specialist you need is Dr. Laura, the chiropractor. Yes, chiropractor. Gentle chiropractic techniques like the Webster technique has been proven to help you achieve all of those. When your spine is properly aligned, you have a clear brain-body connection, which in turn helps with your basic bodily functions on both physical and mental level. This gentle technique is wonderful for pregnant women and children, including infants, and addresses a vast array of issues. Visit www.soulshinechiropractic.com to book your free consultation with Dr. Lara at her Brooklyn clinic. Initial consultation is free and potential benefits of treatment can stretch much further than you think. That's www.soulshinechiropractic.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online
online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Welcome back to the programme. It's exactly 26 minutes past the hour. Great to have your company this Wednesday, the 13th of December 2017. Our first guest, I came across him, I was recommended to check him out, and he was on RT this week talking about the EU Army, PESCO, and all of that. Fascinating man, regular geopolitical commentator for RT and other channels as well. He's a professor of science and physics at the University of Louvain in Belgium, and he's also written a couple of acclaimed books, but he's written several books, including Humanitarian Imperialism, which was received even rave reviews in this country and elsewhere. Delighted to welcome to the programme, live from Belgium, Professor Jean Bricmont. Jean, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hello, how are you? Can you hear me?
We're getting you loud and clear, Jean. You sound great. You sound like you're in the room. Thank you for joining us. Good to hear you.
Thank you for having me.
It's great. Jean, you mentioned, and I was fascinated by this, when you were speaking with RT, that the foundation of and the creation of the European Army is not about protecting the Union from future threats, but it's actually possibly about preparing us for future wars of aggression. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the problem is that I don't believe that we are under any threat. You see, from whom are we under threat? There is terrorism, but that's a separate question. But the usual threat comes from Russia. But I really don't see how the Russians could conceivably attack an EU member state. I mean, they did not invade Ukraine, for example, which they could maybe do. They certainly aren't going to invade the Baltic state or Poland, because that would be an enormous trouble for them, and it would be a case for generalized war, and they know it. So how on earth could they do that? I mean, you know, it's sort of absurd to... It's a little bit like during the Cold War. It was clearly a stalemate along the lines at the end of World War II, and neither the West nor the East would attack the territory of the other, and that was that. And accumulating weapons didn't change anything to that fact. And it seems to me the situation is the same here. So if we have new weapons, what are we going to do? Now, of course, if we are going to attack weaker states, like in the Middle East, that's another proposition. But of course, the question is, what are the chances of success there? Because if you see Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya, I don't know what they are going to do. So that's up to them. But you see, there is a whole rhetoric about us having Europeans now having our own army and so on and so forth, etc. But it's also, you know, military waste of money thrown away to the military industrial complex.
So you see a possible scenario that it might be easier to wage war on a Middle Eastern country. So somebody decides that there is a dictator and he is killing his own people. The usual story. He needs to be dealt with. you see this European army as making it easier for a European task force to join in with NATO and attack other countries in the Middle East. It could be making that process a bit easier, Jean.
Yes, but I basically think it's a waste of money and sort of a bureaucratic, you know, it's a sort of the inertia, the bureaucratic, the European bureaucracy running wild and creating one more bureaucracy. I don't think they have plans to wage war because they have already waged war against everybody who is not their allies. I mean, whom are they going to attack? Iran? I mean, it's only Iran left as far as I can see. Everybody else, they're not going to attack Israel, I believe. Lebanon, maybe? I mean, who am I? I mean, I don't see whom they are going to attack, you see.
North Korea, maybe?
Sorry?
North Korea, maybe, is a possibility?
Yeah, but not for European army. That's not European. I mean, the US could attack North Korea, yes, but the Europeans aren't going to do anything there. And again, you see, these attacks must be they must get rid of nuclear weapons in a first strike, and so on. There are all kinds of uncertainties, to put it mildly there. I mean, to me, you see, I think there is a risk of war because you accumulate weapons in all sides and there could be an accident. But I don't think they have a real plan of going to war because they have run out of target and they have sort of, I think many people realize it has been a mess, even from their point of view. In Syria, they didn't go to war. They used war by proxy.
And it's turned out to be a disaster. It's caused untold deaths, and it's obviously sent millions of people out of the country and into Europe, right?
They probably don't care very much about that, but they may care about the refugees crisis to some extent. And they also care about the fact that in the end it backfired. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not in their mind. I mean, I think the militarists are a bit crazy and the bureaucrats also. But I don't see any plan now of waging a war. I mean, it's mostly the U.S. is threatening two countries, North Korea and Iran. But I don't see what the European army is going to do in that equation. You know, I mean, after all, we are already part of NATO, so we are contributing to NATO. This is meant to be an alternative to NATO, but we don't need an alternative to NATO. We need to get rid of NATO.
It's been argued, John, it's been argued on this program by former CIA officers that one of the things that could happen is, I mean, we're seeing a lot of anti-Russian propaganda in Western media, in this country and in the United States and in other European countries. A lot of claims are being made about Russia that have not been substantiated. And former CIA officers and analysts have suggested to me that the real reason for this European army is for an eventual armed conflict with Russia herself. What do you think of that?
Well, you see, the problem with the war with Russia is that, you see, I don't believe, I may be wrong, but I don't believe a conventional war can last very long as a conventional war between nuclear powers. The reason is that the temptation for a first nuclear strike would be too high for both sides. You imagine tanks, Western tanks rolling into Moscow and no reaction from the Russian at the nuclear level. I mean, it just seems to be implausible. I mean, I mean, people will be tempted to strike first because they think the other are going to strike first and get rid of their nuclear weapons. So it seems to me that, you know, it doesn't seem plausible to have a conventional war. And then even if there was a conventional war, and even given the relationship of forces, which on paper are in favor of NATO, how are they going to win against Russians on their soil? It's very different. Of course, if the Russians attack Western Europe, they would be contained by NATO. That's true. But if NATO attacks Russia on its soil, like Germans, like Napoleon, how are they going to win? They aren't winning in Afghanistan. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
We're seeing unprecedented, though.
They may be crazy, but, you know, I don't know how crazy they are, but of course I think it's crazy. I don't think it's a rational. The only thing which I found semi-rational in this PESCO business is to throw money to the military, money which we don't have and money which we borrow from the Chinese and so on. But nevertheless, throwing money to the military, that's something that makes some sense to me. But going to war with Russia, maybe they are crazy. They are that crazy, but I hope not.
Things have gotten progressively crazy, though, haven't they, Jean, over the last decade, two decades?
Yeah,
who knows what's going to happen? I mean, we're seeing at the moment an unprecedented propaganda war against Russia. Maybe even more concentrated than during the Cold War. I mean, the Russians have been banned from the Winter Olympics. It has been claimed.
I know.
It's crazy,
it's even
right?
Even worse than the Cold War, especially because the Russians are not communists. The Russians are capitalists in many ways. So, I mean, they welcome Western investment and so on. So the reason that could be given during the Cold War don't exist anymore.
So what's, in your opinion, you know, blaming the Russians for interfering in European elections and the United States election, telling stories about the Russians killing innocent people in Syria, banning the Russians from the Olympics, where is that all going to lead, Jean? What's the purpose, do you think, of all of this?
I don't know, but of course, even during the Cold War, there was no open war, you see. I mean, I'm reading about Kennedy, for example, and Kennedy was very much opposed, apparently, during the Cuban Missile Crisis to the Joint Chief of Staff and to people like Curtis LeMay and so on, who wanted to go out to an all-out war. He was worried about a nuclear war with Russia, and he was right when some of his advisors told him about the mutual assured destruction theory. So I hope they still remember that in Washington. I don't know if they do, but how can I know? I mean, it seems to me that one should fight this war hysteria, but one should not really think that there is a plan to wage war, because there may be no plan. There may just be, you know, once there is an ideology going on and everybody is denounced as a traitor, then you have to be, you know, it's a mass hysteria. So you have to follow the party line, and if you don't, you are denounced. It's a bit like, it's a Western version of the Cultural Revolution or something like that, that everybody has to, you know, toe the line, and if not, you are supposed to be a traitor and sold out to the Russians. It's crazy, but I hope it doesn't mean. I mean, I still don't see any plan to go to war, because I don't see how they are going to handle that.
Do you know what's interesting, John? Let me put this to you. And by the way, thanks for coming on the program today. I'm really enjoying listening to you speak. If you've just joined the program, Jean Bricmont is on the line, the author and the academic. You'll see Jean occasionally on RT, geopolitical analyst, very interesting man, got some really, really interesting insights into what's happening. Let me put this to you, Jean. We heard last year, in fact, Richard Haass, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he addressed an assembly, I think it might have been in DC, and he said, what we're looking at now, he said, is New World Order 2.0. And New World Order 2.0 means, I'm going to paraphrase, but I'm going to say exactly what he said. He said, if we, the virtuous, if we see something happening inside a country that we think is a threat to us, whether it's a threat to us environmentally or a threat to us militarily, sovereignty doesn't matter. We should be able to intervene. He said people shouldn't be able to hide behind sovereign borders anymore. Now, that's an extraordinary thing, Jean. And I'm thinking the European Union army fits that like a glove, doesn't it? To be used for such an eventuality. Also, the people of Kazakhstan or the people of Armenia, there's something happening in that country that we don't like, so we can cross borders because this is World Order 2.0. That's what Richard Haass was talking about, the Council on Foreign Relations, and you could see how something like a European army could be used to implement such ideas. What do you think? We're just losing you slightly, Jean. We've just lost you slightly there. I hope we can get you back. Your audio has faded very badly there.
And how do you hear me now?
Just about. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll briefly disconnect and reconnect. It's like you've moved away from the microphone there. Let's get Jean back on there and see can we get him on. He's been very, very critical of the European Union. I want to get his thoughts on the European Union as well, and on the UK leaving the European Union, more importantly. Right, John, I think we might have you back in the room.
Hello?
Not really, no, it's like you're 1,000 miles away. I don't know if you've moved away from the microphone there.
I don't understand. Do you hear me now?
Not really, no, we can't really hear you at all there. Oh, this is a problem, isn't it? What are we going to do? We'll just try again. We'll disconnect and reconnect. Is it a week for gremlins? Somebody said to me, Mercury is in retrograde. We had a problem last night with the Brazilian rainforest, didn't we? Jean, are we back? No, we're not. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to take some music very quickly. When we come back, we'll give him a ring.
Hello.
Jean.
Yes, you hear me now?
Hello.
Hello, yes. Hello. Do you hear me?
Hello.
Hello, do you don't hear? I hear you. You don't hear me?
Jean, I think we've sorted it out. There you go. We've got you live back in the room. Jean, thank you for your patience. I appreciate that.
No, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened with the telephone. But
anyway. The Skype. Look, Skype sometimes is unreliable depending on internet speeds. So thanks for your patience. I was asking just before we got cut off there about the Council on Foreign Relations and Richard Haass saying that we're entering a new World Order 2.0 where...
Yes. That's true. But of course, how are they going to get rid of sovereignty of countries like Russia or China? I mean... This is an all-out war. I mean, the sovereignty has been, after all, they have attacked countries that were, after all, pretty weak militarily and divided, like Iraq and Libya, where the leadership was not really, you know, appreciated by everybody and so on, so they could play on internal division. Then they tried to do the same thing in Syria, and there they failed. And, you know, I mean, it still seems, I mean, okay, I don't know how realistic they are. Maybe they're not realistic at all. But it seems to me that they have a minimum degree of realism, then they should realize that it's not going to work. I mean, just not going to work.
Can I ask you a question on that, John? Can I ask you a question on that? I mean, you're an academic and you have a terrific reputation for being a critical thinker. You think outside the box and you look in areas others don't. Is it possible that we look at the failure in Syria, we look at the failure in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and maybe we should stop looking upon those excursions as failures. And maybe we should contemplate those behind Syria. Yeah. That what they wanted all along was the chaos failure that we see now, right? How do you feel about that?
Yes, but you see, the problem with this is that the only people who... I'll be very blunt about that. The only people who want chaos are the Israelis. They want to destroy the rival state in the Middle East. The Americans have no interest in chaos. The American capitalists need stability, and they want stability in Saudi Arabia and so on. So I don't think they are really interested in chaos per se. They get chaos. But I don't see how this is benefiting for them. And maybe there are voices in the United States who don't want. I mean, maybe Tillerson, for example, does not want chaos, the Secretary of State. I don't know how influential he is. But, of course, there are other people in the Trump and even in the Trump administration are totally in the hands of the pro-Israel lobby. So of course these people may want more chaos, but whether they will get it or not, I don't know. And in Syria, the chaos backfired because it strengthened the Syrian army and it strengthened the Hezbollah mostly, and Iran and the prestige of those movements, even in the Sunni world, because they resisted Saudi Arabia and the subversion of the jihadists and so on. And not everybody in the Muslim world likes those guys. I mean, many people don't like them.
Yes.
Even though they are Muslim, they are not necessarily favorable to, you know, fundamentalism of that Wahhabi fundamentalism.
It's very interesting that you say that the Israeli government would welcome and encourage the chaos, but maybe not, you know, elements of the US government. But one of the things that I know RT is courageous enough to challenge, and maybe one or two other networks, but the mainstream media in this country won't tackle, is the extent of the Israeli lobby influence in London and in DC. And it's huge, isn't it, John? It's very powerful.
Yes, that I'm totally convinced. I mean, I'm totally on the side of Mersheimer and Wald on that, and even more, and Petras and so on. I think the there is something which many critics of the war, of the wars in the Middle East miss, is this dimension of the Zionist influence and the desire to not to democratize the state, not even to loot them, because they haven't really taken the Iraqi oil. The Russian and Chinese company can use Iraqi oil if they want, so they haven't really classical colonialist, you know, attitude would just be to loot the oil, but they didn't do that. And it seems to me that chaos is the only goal, and in a sense they have achieved it, but in a sense only because these countries survive. I mean, after all, you know, wars tend to end, and then when they end and people rebuild themselves and they rebuild, and Iraq still exists as a country and Syria still exists as a country, so it's only a partial success. And now with Saudi Arabia, with getting Saudi Arabia on board, I mean, Saudi Arabia seems to be now totally on the side of Israel, but that's not going to do them any good in the long run. I mean, I'm quite sure. I mean, there is one thing which is absolutely, you know, for whatever reason it is, something which is absolutely in the mind of everybody in the Muslim world, is the Palestinian cause. The leadership may not care about that, but the people do. And in the long run, you can't have a policy which is going contrary to the wish of the vast majority of the people.
Jean Bricmont is live on the line. We've got Jean for another 10 minutes. I want to talk a little bit about the European Union, Jean.
And
yes. There was a significant vote in the House of Commons about 15, 20 minutes ago. And it's a vote that the Labour Party and Conservative Party rebels wanted. They defeated Theresa May over the EU withdrawal bill. Basically, they have won their concession that they must get a legal vote on whether to accept the deal or not at the end of it. A lot of people feel in this country that Brexit will never happen. Do you think the United Kingdom will ever properly leave the European Union?
That I don't know. You mean they're going to have another referendum at the end of the process?
Well, not nationally, but at the end of the process, whatever deal is done between the UK government and the European Union, it then goes to Parliament, and Parliament will get to either approve it or throw it out. But people are worried here that throwing it out means stopping Brexit altogether. What do you think?
Yeah, that I don't know. I mean, I think the forces of the people who are for the Remain, of course, haven't given up. That's true. I myself am favorable to the peaceful dismantling of the European Union. I don't think it's ever going to work to have all these different countries having to have a common policy, because they don't have there is no real people, there is no real democracy at the European level. So it's only bureaucrats who are agreeing on a common policy. But that's difficult to predict. I mean, I'm not British and I don't know enough. But you mean the Labour Party is actually in favour of Remain now?
Well, they were even during the referendum
but I thought they changed a little bit.
Well, it's interesting. They say that their official position is that they want to respect the referendum result, but they're very much in favour of having a parliamentary vote on the deal in 2 years' time. My question was more general. It was about, really, do you think the forces behind the European Union will ever allow a state actually leave, because there's some very powerful forces who want to see the European Union stay together. And it is, Anton. Go ahead.
I know, but the British people have voted, and the British, unlike the French or the Dutch, seems to be more attached to democracy than the French and the Dutch, who were actually not caring about the vote of the people in 2005. It's difficult to predict. I mean, I think that if they somehow don't do Brexit, you see, I don't know what the mood of the people in the Britain is, but I think the mood, again, it's like Palestine. You see, I think if you go against the will of the people in Britain, this is something that's going to be very unpopular in Britain, because the British are attached to their, to some aspect of their democracy.
We talk about democracy, Jean. I mean, is democracy an illusion in 2017? Is it an, electoral democracy, ballot box democracy? Is it just an absolute illusion at this point?
I wouldn't say absolute. I mean, people believe in it. So if you, you have to go around. Like in 2005, what did they do? They did the Lisbon Treaty, then they didn't have a referendum, etc., etc. So you can always manipulate things. But I believe that now the Brexit has been so clear that the Brexit vote has been so clear that it's going to be difficult to go around. But I don't know. They have many tricks in their bag, so I don't know. I mean, when you're asking me to predict the future, and I can't predict the past.
No, neither can I. That's an interesting one. That's a subject for another show, predicting the past. But tell me this. I mean, we saw the crazy situation in Greece, didn't we? Where the Greek people believed that they had elected a saviour in Alexis Tsipras, and that he was going to deliver them from the European Union and the debt. And of course he didn't. He turned out to be just another Europhile. Is Greece really, do we look at Greece and do we see, well, if the Greeks didn't leave the European Union, despite everything that happened to Greece, well, nobody's ever going to leave, and it's just going to go from strength to strength. And how do you go about peacefully dismantling the European Union? I love your phrase, but how do you do that? How would you do that?
Well, that I don't know, but the difference, of course, Greece was deeply indebted and in a much weaker position than the United Kingdom. So, you know, the United Kingdom can stand on its own. It does not; it's not belonging to the Eurozone, so it has its own currency. It doesn't seem to be doing so badly now, even though Brexit has been declared. I'm certain that in the European Union they try to make Brexit as difficult as possible in order to make an example for others. But of course the British aren't going to, capitulate so easily. And there are forces in both parties, both in the Labour and the Conservative Party, who are in favour of Brexit. I think my impression is that Jeremy Corbyn, even though he has been against Brexit officially, his heart is sort of in between about that, so he's not that committed to remain,
For politically ambitious reasons, I think for ambitious, for career ambitions, I think you're absolutely right. I'd like to ask you one final question, Jean, before we let you get back to your work there. Thanks again for coming on. You were speaking to RT in April this year about the French election, and you said something that intrigued me, and of course you turned out to be right. This was when Marine Le Pen was still very much, in the running and was still very much a genuine threat. You said to RT, you said they will use every trick in the book to get Macron elected.
Of course.
Now you were right. Who is they? Who are they?
Oh, that's everybody. That's all the media, all the powers that be, the bosses, even the unions. I mean, everybody was against. I mean, it was just like in 2002, everybody was against Marine Le Pen. So they, because Marine Le Pen represents everything the elites don't want. I mean, she's she appears to be anti-European. Even her is not anti-European genuinely. And then, of course, there's all the fantasy that she's a fascist and so on, which isn't true. But, once you stir up this fantasy of fascism and the return of fascism, people have been so much brought up on that idea that they swallow it. And then it has a very, it's like the anti-Russian hysteria. After all, Putin is the new Hitler. So if Putin be the new Hitler, then Marine Le Pen can be the new Pétain. I mean, this is ideological. It's a religion. It's a faith.
So that is the final question. But just to follow up, just very briefly on that, you talk about the media. It's the same here. It's the same in my country, Ireland. It's the same in the United States. So what we have is not democracy then. At the very least, we have corporatocracy, and it's probably more like fascism now, really, isn't it?
Well, it's soft fascism in the sense that people are not... I mean, in this democracy, it's very easy to... because people, after all, many people live uncomfortable lives. There are people who are in misery, but then these people are not politically active, and the people who are politically active, like myself, academics and so on, are not starving, so we are not going to take up arms. And then, of course, it's very easy to silence people because it's easy to just marginalize them. You don't have to put them in jail or something. You just marginalize them, you make fun of them, you attack their reputation, you insult them, you know, you call them anti-Semite or something like that. That's the favorite weapon here,
yeah.
or a fascist or a nationalist and so on. And then they marginalize you. And then people toe the line because it's easier to think about something else and worry about, how do you write French, you know, inclusive grammar, as they say, or some wild goose chase that they can worry about and not concern about major issues. That's easy, and that's the way it works. I wouldn't call it fascism, because fascism was facing more determined enemies. After all, the communists, the anarchists, even the socialists were determined against fascism. Here, people are not determined and not determined enough, so you don't need fascism. You just need the soft fascism that we have here.
Soft fascism is an interesting phrase. Jean, thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
Apologies for the sound issues earlier on.
I apologize myself. I think there's something wrong with my Skype, but I don't know.
But I enjoyed chatting with you. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very much for the interview. Okay.
Lovely, bye-bye. Jean. Thank you. Jean Bricmont, live on the line from Brussels in Belgium. Fascinating guy. You can hear Jean pretty regularly on RT Europe, on RT France and RT Belgium and RT Europe, talking about geopolitical issues. Interesting there, we talked about the desire by the Israelis for chaos and mayhem in the Middle East, and that desire might not be shared by some political figureheads in the United States. However, we've heard on this programme from many people, you know, again, former CIA people, politicians from the United States who have said, well, look, journalists, the Israeli lobby are in complete control of the US government, US Congress and the Senate. Interesting stuff. Sorry again about the sound issues earlier on there. John might have been, it's one of those things. Sometimes once in a blue moon on Skype you get some problems. Depends on where people are, and it depends on the traffic at the time of the evening. In the early to mid evening, of course, more people are online than are not online, I think. And that's the way it works. Right, that was Jean Bricmont. Enjoyed that. 3 minutes to the top of the hour. Going to take another very quick break. Coming up in a minute, live from Bali, where it'll be 4 a.m. Thursday morning. Joachim Hagopian joins the show. I was put in touch with him by former CIA officer Robert David Steele. He's got a new book out. Fascinating that he worked as a therapist for nearly or just over a quarter of a century with youngsters whom were abused, and he's written a book about Satanism, abuse and the deep state. Fascinating guy, you don't want to miss this. Joachim Hagopian joins me in a couple of minutes' time. In the meantime, we will take a breather. Thank you for listening. Keep your tweets coming in as well. Back in 3.
Clear mind, ability to handle stressful situations and make better and wiser decisions. The specialist you need is Dr. Laura, the chiropractor. Yes, chiropractor. Gentle chiropractic techniques like the Webster technique has been proven to help you achieve all of those. When your spine is properly aligned, you have a clear brain-body connection, which in turn helps with your basic bodily functions on both physical and mental level. This gentle technique is wonderful for pregnant women and children, including infants, and addresses a vast array of issues. Visit www.soulshinechiropractic.com to book your free consultation with Dr. Lara at her Brooklyn clinic. Initial consultation is free, and potential benefits of treatment can stretch much further than you think.
That's www.soulshinechiropractic.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now. So read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back. Fairly big news in terms of the UK's decision to leave the European Union this evening. As I mentioned just before we spoke with Jean Bricmont there, the government has been narrowly defeated in a very important vote on the Brexit bill, the EU withdrawal bill, which would copy EU law into British law, which would end the European Court of Justice supremacy over UK law, and basically paved the way for the UK to leave. But Dominic Grieve, a Conservative Party MP, former Attorney General, he wanted to amend the EU withdrawal bill, and he basically wanted to enshrine in law that Parliament will get a guaranteed vote on the final Brexit deal struck with the European Union. And he succeeded, despite a last-minute attempt by the government to offer concessions to rebels in their own party, in its own party. The amendment was passed by 309 to 305. People like Nicky Morgan, the former Education Secretary, miserable failure as Education Secretary as well, it must be said. Nicky Morgan, miserable failure. Speak to any teacher in this country. Crowing triumphantly on Twitter, saying that it's back in Parliament's hands now, the process of leaving the European Union. It's just another little step, of course, on the way to preventing the country leaving the European Union at all. And we've been saying for a long time, I think David said the morning after the vote, great result, but the real work begins now. And by that, of course, David meant that every man and woman in the country who went out and voted to leave, they had to do what they could to hold the government to the deal. And that is basically to harangue and harass and write to and phone your MPs to tell them that they better honour that result, ultimately. But it's not going to be honoured. We won't be leaving the European Union. Let's get our next guest on the line, because it's 3.5 minutes past the hour. And he's a nice guy, because he's gotten out of bed at the crack of dawn in Bali to speak with us. I'm looking forward to it because I was introduced to him by Robert David Steele, the former CIA officer. Robert got in touch with me and he said, Richie, you really need to pay attention to Joachim Hagopian. And I introduced myself to Joachim and I started looking at what he was doing. And he's a fascinating man. He's had a fascinating career, a varied career. He's a graduate of the West Point, of course, very famous military academy. And he's been a former officer in the US Army. But very interestingly, he's also worked in clinical psychology. And he's done that for over a quarter of a century. And he has treated children, amongst these patients, children whom were abused. And he's got a book out called Pedophilia and Empire, Satan, Sodomy and the Deep State. This is very timely, of course. It's something we talk a lot about on this programme. But it seems to be gathering pace and gathering steam, the efforts to expose this and how prevalent this is and how common this is in hierarchies around the world. Let's welcome to the programme and thank for getting out of bed early, Joachim Hagopian. Joachim, welcome to the programme. Good morning.
Good morning, Richie.
You're a gentleman.
Good evening to you.
And good evening to us. That's right. You're into Thursday, the 14th of December. We're still in
already,
in Wednesday.
Yeah.
Joachim, thanks for staying up. You know, one of the things we might have done, we might have pre-recorded it, but it's a very interactive program, this, and it's a real live show. So you staying up, we really appreciate that. And I'm not paying lip service to that. I'm thrilled that you've given us so much of your time and you've stayed up to do that. So thanks for coming on. And thanks to Robert, of course, our mutual friend, for introducing us. What an enormous undertaking the book must have been for you. And the first question I suppose I'll ask you, Joachim, is when did you decide to write it? Was there an event? Was there something? Did something happen that triggered in your mind and brought up all the work you did with all of those abused children? Was there one thing that said to you, you've got to write this book?
Yeah, I mean, Pizzagate came out October, November, December last year, and that was what got me thinking about pedophilia. I wrote about 6 or 7 articles, actually, on pedophilia, mostly for SOT.net. That was the only news site that I write for that actually would dare take a look at this very controversial topic. I wrote regularly for Global Research and also for LouRockwell.com. And they're both great news sites. They're really, Lou Rockwell and Mikhail Chostolovsky are wonderful human beings that really are dedicated toward exposing the truth out there. But in the face of the, quote, fake news, basically the whole runaround that the real fake news is putting on the alternative news, they use Pizzagate as a means to. They had the lone gunman, who's a sometime actor, would-be actor, go in there in the pizza joint and shoot off a couple rounds. And, oh, look what the fake news has done. They've made a wacko go out and start killing people, maybe. So, that was the basic aim of the whole thing. But if you put everything together, all the circumstantial evidence surrounding the Pizzagate, it's pretty convincing that there is a Washington, D.C. child sex ring, and it's probable that there's some kind of pedophilia activity going on at that pizza joint based on all the evidence, based on the Podesta emails, etc. And it's not like it's the first time. I'm currently writing Chapter 13, which is all about the Franklin scandal, and that... in case your listeners are unfamiliar with that, that is America's biggest pedophile scandal in the history of the United States.
Huge story. Huge story.
Huge.
That. Yeah. We're talking about Lawrence E. King, right?
It went right to the, yes, Lawrence E. King. It went right to the White House. Reagan, George Bush Sr. were both directly involved in that, particularly the ex-CIA director, vice president/president, George HW. He basically put an end to that story. I mean, it came out in the Washington Times in June 29th, 1989. And that's a mainstream paper. And then Tom Brokaw on NBC News actually ran with that Washington Times story. It went by the headlines of Callboy's Midnight Callboy Tour does tours in the White House. And really, it was huge because, yes, Lawrence E. King was basically the ringleader who basically trafficked a bunch of kids around. I mean, we're talking hundreds of kids throughout the 80s that this man had basically given to the Omaha wealthy pedophile crowd.
That's right.
And then he made contacts through the GOP party. He sang national anthem twice at 84 and 88 convention. And he ran, very tightly with a lot of the higher ups, including George H.W. Bush. And so there was a setup. Basically, Craig Spence, who was a GOP lobbyist at the time, he was the Washington guy, the main guy in Washington. And between Lawrence and Craig Spence, they would actually have this child sex ring servicing the Washington politicians. So both Republican and Democrat, of course. There's sickos in both parties. We both know that. It goes way back. And I also covered a whole bunch of child care scandals, one of which was at my alma mater, West Point. I didn't even know about this until I started investigating about Pizzagate and all the rest of the pedophilia scandals through the years. But 10 years after I graduated in the mid-80s, there was a big scandal where dozens of kids there at the daycare center on the West Point grounds, that was a daycare for the military personnel stationed there, both officers and enlisted men. And there were dozens of kids that were actually involved in satanic ritual abuse, sexual abuse. And of course, it also was happening, and this is the one that got all the publicity, or by far the most publicity. And that was the one out in California, the McMartin Daycare Center. But there was also one going on up there in San Francisco at the Presidio. And that one involved Lieutenant Colonel Michael A. Aquino, who seems to be a central figure in every single basically pedo-gate scandal in America. This military intelligence, our officer in the Army, a psychological warfare officer, basically a handler, a programmer for the MK Ultra Monarch program. He basically was involved with Kathy O'Brien. He basically was involved with Paul Bonacci, who was one of the victims of the Franklin scandal. He would take people out to Bohemian Grove, where it's very infamous for the elite that go out there and are involved in these kind of satanic rituals where they actually do snuff films. Hunter S. Thompson basically was actually involved in a snuff film out there with Paul Bonacci. Who was the victim, who was actually forced to have sex with a six-year-old boy that they shot, and he was forced to have sex even after he died, right there, and they were filming. And Hunter S. Thompson, of course, the famous journalist, well, he was involved in a lot of this elite stuff with pedophilia. And then he died rather mysteriously, and I have no doubt that he was also murdered. Under very strange circumstances. He was about to break the thing open. I think he had a guilty conscience. And that happened right when the James Gannon thing, I know I'm bouncing all around with different
no,
things.
No, no, and I'll pull you back in, Joaquin. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
No, the Thompson one is very interesting because I've heard Thompson's name mentioned over the years as well. And you mentioned there the mysterious death there. It was alleged that he committed suicide, but there's all sorts of problems with that. Some of these names, and you mentioned Cathy, who of course has been on this program in the past, Cathy O'Brien.
Yeah, wonderful.
A lot of these people have in the past have gone to local and state law enforcement, and they've spilled the beans. They've blown the whistle on these people, but they've not ever gotten any satisfaction. They've not been properly investigated. This is the thing, yeah. And when somebody like you comes on. And I'm very interested in you because of where you've been and the experience you've had. And I know that victims have been telling you this and telling you these names. I do have to mention as well that some of these people that are alive, in their absence, they're not here. You know, they would say, and their legal teams would say, they've never been accused of anything. They've never been arrested. They've never been charged with anything. And that's what these people were saying. I've got to mention that. But the names you're mentioning are names that we hear time and time and time and time and time again.
Right.
This is the thing. You know, we've got to acknowledge that. And we're not in the business of trying and convicting and condemning people in, you know, in a public forum. We're in the business of asking if people are being named by so many children and so many victims and so many other people, why at least are they not interviewed in the presence of a lawyer? Right, Joaquim? Yeah. We're entitled to that much, right? At the very yeah. least, you know what I mean? But none of it happens. Go ahead.
Every one of these scandals has a cover-up.
Yeah.
They've all been covered up. I mean, and of course, you guys over there in UK know all about cover-ups too, because there's been a whole bunch of pedophile scandals. And of course, Jimmy Savile for five centuries was actively sodomizing kids and killing them. Well, they're doing that all basically. I think in a lot of the Western nations, it's really, and it's global, of course. They take a lot of victims from third world countries and fly them around or put them on cargo ships and move them around. But primarily, I believe it's the governments of the West that are the perpetrators mainly. Although, of course, you know, the pedophilia, you know, it runs deep everywhere, I think, all over the earth. And basically all the governments are corrupt. Let's face it. Everybody knows that pretty much. There's no totally clean government, national government that exists in this world. There are some that are totally dirty, and then there are some that are a little bit less dirty. But that's about the only difference.
Do you know what annoys me, Joaquim? Do you know what really bugs me? When I speak to somebody like yourself, is that you mentioned Lawrence E. King there, and that's a huge story for anybody who's only getting into this. That's a great place to begin in the United States, because yeah. they were taking children from the famous Boys Town orphanage, and they were taking them all over the country. King was connected up to the wazoo, connected Republican, where first name terms with Ronald Reagan. He was supplying boys. And listening to you talking about the international element, Joaquim, what really cheeses me off is that I'm sure sometimes they use military planes, but a lot of times they're using commercial flights. And the people, the manager on a commercial flight is really the head flight attendant, not the pilot. So the pilot's doing whatever he or she is doing, right? They're in charge. But the flight attendants, Joaquim, they must have a treasure trove of evidence here.
I'm sure they do, yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice to have somebody come forth from the industry that, you know, would be like a wonderful whistleblower if they could be able to confirm this stuff. I mean, basically the CIA are the main pimps of this whole global operation. They really are the culprits, and they work with the State Department, U.S. State Department, embassies all over the world, and they take kids from orphanages. They use charities, they use front organizations, they use USAID, you know, the investment development for American foreign aid, and they use the Red Cross, they use basic, and they use military contractors. Look at DynCorp and Halliburton and Blackwater, and they're all involved in this, the UN, they're all involved. The military intelligence is involved. But it's mostly the CIA, and the military also is somewhat involved in this operation. I mean, wherever you find, I mean, let's face it, America sends its troops to, you know, at least 134 countries have occupied military occupiers in U.S. uniform. and, what, 800 up to maybe 1,000 different military posts all over the world. Wherever you find a whole concentration of military, you'll also find a lot of trafficking. Basically, all of this goes together. We talk about the trafficking of drugs. We talk about the trafficking of the children. We talk about the trafficking of illegal arms. And we talk about the trafficking of human organs and bone marrow harvesting and organ harvesting. And they all go together, you know. And basically, the kids at large come from a lot of these war zones. They're displaced. We have more people on this earth that are basically homeless because of U.S. empire wars, basically, fighting most of the cases, Israel's wars, the Greater Israel Project wars. And it looks like we're headed for another one, this switcheroo to Jerusalem. I just wrote an article on that. But yeah, wherever you find the U.S. empire wars, you'll find displaced people and easy pickings for these parasites to move in to refugee camps and basically buy off in a lot of cases, because the parents are so poor and desperate. And they actually give them money and say, yeah, we'll marry your daughter off, you know, and they think, oh, at least our kid's going to have a better life. And then they go into this whole pipeline system where the average age of the sex slave lasts 2 years, and they're dead. I mean, they don't usually last. They're expendables. I mean, the evil ones that are doing all this damage to them regard them as not even human. And you know, part of the whole deal is, you know, I wrote a whole chapter on MK Ultra Monarch program and the Illuminati families. I mean, they take kids starting at 1 and 2 years old, and they induce dissociative disorder where they have all these multiple personalities, and they program them so that they will be sex slaves, so that they will be spies, so that they will be drug mules, and they also train them to have photographic memory for spy purposes. And they torture them, they drug them, and you know, I mean, a lot of them, they don't last, but the ones that, like Kathy O'Brien and Bryce Taylor, and there's a whole bunch of them out there now that have written books and have gone public, and I applaud these people for being so courageous, because obviously they're doing it at great risk to themselves. But the ones that have actually come forth and written their things, they have not had any kind of slander, libel, lawsuits. The politicians that are guilty of this haven't been able to touch it or go against them, because they know they're telling the truth. So they just deny, and that's the end of it. But they don't do anything legally because they are telling the truth. So there's so much evidence of a massive, massive network. I mean, the Clintons are in so deep, and so is Bush. I mean, it's been a dynasty, basically, in America for 40 years, basically, where we have the same people that are basically, you know, this New World Order crowd, you know, one world government. They're going for one world government. And of course, they've used the children and the wars all for the nefarious purposes of destabilizing this world, so that they can actually, quote, the government can move in and be the hero protector, which is just the opposite. They are the killer, but they'll pretend to be the protector with the people who are in desperation and you know, for food. It's going to come down to a lot of, I hate to say it, but there's been a lot of people that have been saying it, but there's going to be a major economic collapse. The old system, they've been kicking the can down the road for many years, and they're planning this war at the same time that they're planning for the collapse of the economy. And I'm afraid 2018 is going to be the year when it all falls apart.
You're right about the collapse of the economy, by the way. One of the things we talk about on the program is economics, but in a way that we hope that people can understand it. We think, or at least I think, that next year there's going to be a big interest hike by the Bank of England. And if it happens, Joachim, it's going to destroy people here. It's going to clean people out. And that's very interesting. I just want to just remind our listeners, Joachim Hagopian is live on the line from Bali. Great credit to Joachim for staying up and speaking to us so early in the AM there on Thursday. He's written a book, and we're going to give you links as to how you can get it. It's called Pedophilia and Empire, Satan, Sodomy and the Deep State. It's great to have him on the programme. Not talking about this, of course, it's a horrible subject, but it needs to be discussed, and people need to contemplate it and to think about it and to kind of understand that you can't ignore it because it's happening. I want to ask you this, Joachim. Interesting you mentioned Father George Bush, George H.W. Bush. David Icke named him many, many years ago. David went public and said, look, you know, I've been hearing from people, Cassie and others, about Bush. Satanism is so important to these people. What do we understand about that in terms of how serious is that to them? Are they really worshipping some entity, some non-human entity, some intra or interdimensional entity? Is that seriously part of their plan when they do these horrific ritual sacrifices and these unspeakable things? How important is the satanic element of that?
Well, many of these Illuminati families are bloodlines that have been around for many, many centuries, and many of them actually go back to Kabbalism, the pre-Judaism, mysticism, and the occult. They go back to the Egyptian deities, the Babylonians. And so a lot of those satanic rituals actually come from those ancient times. And of course, we also know that they did child sacrificing and pedophilia way back when in those many cultures back then as well. And they managed to infiltrate the Catholic Church. Many of them have been popes. They are royalty, as you're aware, in England. There is that family. And they engage in all these kind of occult rituals. It's definitely known that Saville, who ran very tightly with all the royals, was a Satanist. And the army officer I mentioned earlier, Michael Aquino, he was a Satanist, and then in 1975 he branched out and started his own Temple of Seth, which is one of the Egyptian gods of war and calamity and the underworld. And so these people are Satanists. They get off on having these occult rituals that draw interdimensional forces that are not in the physical plane, but they take physical presence when they do these rituals and when they do these sacrificial kind of cutting up of children and torturing the children, having sex with the children. And they actually have this chemical. I mean, basically animals that are being traumatized and tortured, they give off this chemical adrenochrome. And this is basically what is a surge in these savages when they engage in these practices. And a lot of times, yes, they drink the blood, they eat the organs, they're cannibalistic. For the regular, normal, decent person, I mean, this is like, you know, they can't wrap their head around.
No, they can't comprehend it. That's right.
And pure evil. Yeah.
And when they hear you, you know, and others, they switch off. They dismiss. And I do not hold that against them, because I come from a mainstream commercial media background, and I used to think that guys like you were crazy, Joachim. You know, and I would have said it. I would have been rude. I would have been nasty. I would have been an idiot and I would have said, you know, this is all fantasy. But sadly, you know, information has been made available to me over the years that's proven that it isn't fantasy, that it's a reality. Edward Heath, of course, Satanist, right. Child murderer, or at least if he didn't murder the children himself, he had the security people on his detail murder those children. This is unspeakable and unthinkable stuff. A lot of interest in it, though. People tweeting us, of course, mentioning various names. A lot of these people alive, and we're not going to name them, not because we're frightened of naming them, but we'll you know, in the absence of any decent media, we'll try and uphold the standards of the media. By not naming them, it's not because we're cowardly. It's just that they haven't been convicted of anything. So we can't just be naming people. And so if you want to see what people are saying, go to Twitter before they get blocked or go to Facebook before they get blocked. Some of the artwork, a very good friend of mine and a big help with this program, the Irish actress Jean-Anne Crowley, who's in the west of Ireland, a little bit wetter and colder, Joachim, than Bali. She's in the west of Ireland tonight. And she talks about the artwork being a huge giveaway around the Podesta story in Pizzagate. Sure. Some of that artwork, how could you justify, Joachim? You know, if your friends came over, hey, Joachim, what the hell is that on your wall? How could you... Do you want to tell our listeners about some of this artwork?
Yeah. Well, you go over to the Podesta... Well, John's brother... you go to his house, and he's got, remember the serial killer in Chicago? I'm trying to remember his name, Jeffrey Dahmer. And Jeffrey Dahmer put one of his victims in a pose and took a photo of it. And that's what this Podesta brother actually has in his home. It's this large, I mean, it's like hundreds of pounds. Hanging from the ceiling of this, basically this Dahmer victim, murder victim, that's got his back arched completely, reversed around from what it should be. And then they got all these paintings on the wall of basically kids that have been abused. It's real obvious. And you look at the looks on these kids' faces and you can see total stress. There's others that have, they look like they're on the bottom of a swimming pool dead.
Yeah, dreadful.
And then, you know, there's artwork that was even in the comet Ping Pong that was actually painted by a pedophile victim. And it's obviously clear that that this artwork depicts pedophilia. I mean, it's very, very obvious. You know, so yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a secret club basically. And it only maintains they're able to get away with all their stuff because obviously they've got the head honchos in all the different parts to this puzzle, be it the law enforcement, be it the court system, be it the education system, be it the media system, be it the child welfare system, the government, of course, the military, the CIA, the corporate industry, they're all in it. And it's an inner club of very sick people that actually derive a sense of power. And maybe it actually works for them. Maybe it does give them more power. I can't like say for sure one way or the other.
We're talking about the prepubescent energy, of course, from children. Joachim has just dropped out there momentarily. We'll endeavour to get him back. It's 27 minutes to the top of the hour for Wednesday, the 19th of December. It's not the 19th, it's the 13th. Don't panic. Christmas is not next week. The 13th of December 2017. We're speaking with Joachim Hagopian and we're talking about his brand new book. He's a former graduate of West Point. You dropped out there, Joachim, just momentarily. but you came back.
Okay.
Thankfully, you came back. No, it's one of those things, just a little glitch. I was just mentioning again who you are. Former U.S. Army officer, West Point graduate, has treated abused children, qualified clinical psychologist for more than 25 years. The book is Pedophilia and Empire, Satan, Sodomy and the Deep State. You just mentioned there something strange. We talk about this. David, of course, talks about this. This prepubescent energy that that these satanic paedophiles are after. I'm just going to throw a real strange curveball at you, Joaquin. I read a book last year by Stephen King, and it's the follow-up to The Shining. And God forgive me, I can't think of the name of it, but he's written a follow-up to The Shining about the young boy, Danny, who's grown up now. And Danny, of course, has he's a clairvoyant of sorts. And in Stephen King's book, there is an evil group of people, and they are called the True Knot, as in knot that you make with rope, the True Knot. And they live forever, these people. And how they do that is they murder people. But they do some ritualistic thing whereby the victim's body kind of dissolves, not in acid or anything like that, but kind of vaporizes. And they inhale the essence of the victim. And this energizes them and it keeps them alive. Now, King has written this, and it's about, as I said, the young boy from the Shining. And I sometimes wonder, Joaquin, Stephen King, great guy, obviously, great American, great success. I wonder sometimes, are authors like Stephen King, are they trying to tell people something? Sure. You know, you wonder, don't you? Because that's very, very familiar to me when I read that.
Yeah.
You know, this essence of people, this energy of people that these people are after. And we talk about that with David when David comes on the program, this prepubescent energy. You think this is very significant?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, they've been doing it for many, many centuries, drinking blood and the satanic kind of stuff where they're actually, you know, engaging cannibalism. And, of course, there's now science backing it up, that actually it does rejuvenate tissues and cells in the older people that do drink the blood. So yeah, there is something to it. And these people, of course, now they're, hello?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm listening. Okay. I'm gripped. Go ahead, Joaquin.
They're using transhumanism now and nanotechnology and doing all kinds of genetic kind of, mutation work now. Research that there's horror stories in the deep underground bases where they do a lot of these. They have these my labs there, and they do a lot of the sacrificial killing there too, in the different my labs in the United States and probably worldwide too. But yeah, they're using every kind of means available that money can buy, basically. And being unaccountable for their crimes can buy as well, to basically live forever. I mean, to be as evil as them and live forever, wow. I mean, of course, they are total psychopaths, so they have no conscience whatsoever.
No empathy.
They actually, they get up, no ability, yes, for empathy, to understand how other people feel. Everything's a fake emotion. They just, you know, have to imitate emotion. You know, they're good actors, by the way, and they lie through their teeth in every breath. And they can be very skillful at this. They're also, generally very intelligent and master manipulators as well. But yeah, these people have no conscience, and they actually get off on, if there's a war where millions of people have spilled blood, they get off on all that stuff. They don't have to be necessarily drinking the blood to get a high just from knowing that they've killed a million people.
But they've created an energy that suits what it is they are. This is very interesting. Susan has reminded us, there's a lot of tweets this evening, a lot of tweets. For people to see what others are tweeting, go to twitter.com where it says search Twitter, just put Richie Allen Show, all one word, press enter, and you'll see what people are tweeting. The Stephen King book is called Doctor Sleep. It's the follow-up to The Shining. Took 30 years from to write the sequel to The Shining. Incredible synchronicity with some of the stuff that we're talking about. Donna Devane. Donna is a broadcaster herself. She's listening to Joaquin with interest. She says, Richie, ask Joaquin, what does it say about the American society? Or American people, that we elect Trump and we almost elect Moore, of course, yesterday, all these awful people. Some sort of, I don't know, subversive Stockholm syndrome, Joaquin, you know, are we in the grip of these people that we, you know, or is it the case that anybody who gets to a national stage, they're all compromised, so they're all the same anyway? What's the answer?
Well, I think it's all of the above. I think basically presidents have, ever since JFK, presidents have been selected. They have not been actually voted in by the population. And in the case of Trump, I think it was, we pretty much knew that with Hillary, we were going to get the same old, same old. It's been a dynasty for 40 years, and they knew that that wasn't working for America. And so as an alternative, comes in Trump. But he was selected. Once he started doing well in the GOP primaries, the powers that should not be basically selected him to move forward, and then eventually ditched Hillary with the admissions of the Wiener laptop and the whole pedophilia Epstein thing coming down right at the end there. And of course, both sides were cheating with the electronic voting machines. It's a horror show. But you know, yeah, it's a system basically where you have to be one of them. And I hate to say it, but I think Donald Trump has been compromised. He ran with Jeffrey Epstein. He was a buddy of Epstein for many years. They, you know, socialized together in New York at their mansions there. They socialized down in Florida at their mansions there. Mar-a-Lago, Epstein was a member of that. Epstein's brother even said that Trump traveled on the Lolita Express down to St. James Caribbean Island.
Wow. Trump is on one of those planes. Do you know what's upsetting about that? There are some nice people who come on this program and they're very good and hopefully they will come back. But they're convinced that the Donald is out to get institutional paedophiles. And I don't agree with them, but I will always allow them to come on the program. It's good to, you know, it's good to let people speak that have a different opinion to you. But I just think they're misguided, Joaquin. I mean, I'm glad you brought up the Trump, you know, Epstein connection. We know that Billo was on the Epstein flights at least 20 times. I mean, this is untenable, isn't it? That these guys could have such an association with a filthy child rapist, and yet none of them has been invited to speak to, you know, the FBI, let alone before a grand jury. I mean, Jesus Christ. The first thing you want to do is you want to speak to Clinton. Bill, were you really on 25 of Jeffrey Epstein's flights? What was going on, Bill?
On the flight log.
Yeah.
His name's on the flight log.
He's on the flight log.
His wife was there half dozen times. She's on the flight logs as well, along with Uma Abedin and an underage girl there at the St. James Island. It's on Epstein's, on a Wiener's laptop. The New York police have a copy of that. You can't believe anything that the FBI does. They're all about covering up. That's their function for the government. They're the cover-uppers of all scandals in the government, and have been that for many, many, many years now. They will not investigate things that actually incriminate the people that are in charge of them. So that's the way it goes. And that's the way all the court systems go in America. They've all been bought and sold. And pretty much it's very rare that there's an honest judge out there that will actually even uphold the U.S. Constitution. Look at how the rights of the Constitution have been stripped away ever since basically the 9/11 and the war on terror. They've taken away all the rights. They don't uphold the Constitution even, yet they're all sworn to uphold it. But they violate that oath that they
all take. The time. And you know, in my research into you, because obviously I did my homework before you came on, so I knew who you were, Joaquin. And great that Robert introduced us. I'm glad that you came on the program. I'm sure you'll be back on again. in the future. But you've obviously made the connection in your work, which is terrific. These judges, they don't become judges until they are compromised at some stage. And I've tried to get this through to Trump's supporters. I mean, we've known for years here, because we have people like David Shaler, former MI5 agent in the UK. He talked about how MI5 has files, you know, of every politician in the country. When they think a man or a woman is likely to get a position of influence and power, they compromise them. They entrap them into doing something. And they don't even have to do it. They can doctor evidence. They can, you know, fake photographs using better equipment than we can even dream of. So none of these judges or special prosecutors or attorney generals are going to touch Clinton or Trump, because every one of them has got cemeteries in their closets. Not bloody skeletons. Yeah. They've got cemeteries in their closets. And that's the way it works, right?
Yeah. I mean, basically, there are the hardcore pedophiles, and then there are the ones that have been compromised. And that pretty much includes, probably anywhere from about a third, and these are insiders that have said this, from a third to about half of the people in government, be it Congress or the executive branch, they're compromised because they've been put in situations, they go to parties, and, you know, they think they're going to bed with a woman and they wake up with a child and the cameras were rolling all night and they got the goods on all these people. It's a system that has been allowed to exist because of the whole blackmail angle. And they've been around for, well, look at J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI, the transvestite homosexual pedophile. He tried to get the goods on everybody with his COINTEL operation, and he ran with Trump's mentor, Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn, of course, was the prosecutor of the Rosenbergs and Joe McCarthy's attorney, and he was from New York, and he met Donald in a nightclub in New York back in the 70s. Got Donald out of a little jam with his family that were basically being prejudicial to blacks and their real estate apartment buildings. Anyway, Roy Cohn ran a pedophilia blackmail operation in New York. The Son of Sam murderer mentioned that he went to Roy Cohn's house in Connecticut and with children, and they brought children in. That was part of their thing. The Son of Sam was not a lone operator, as they've been, you know, as the quote press has portrayed him. He was part of a satanic cult, and they actually worked with these higher ups like Roy Cohn to do this dirty satanic business with pedophilia trafficking. And so Roy ran a trafficking ring in New York to get politicians and generals and people of the higher levels to get compromised. So it goes way back, and Donald Trump is part of it. I'd love to think that, you know, they're saying the 2,000, I hear the numbers bouncing around of all these sealed indictments, you know, from the Mueller prosecution investigation. I'd like to think that the Clintons are going to go down, and Chuck Schumer and all the rest of the names that have been mentioned, you know, they're going to get arrested. Yeah, they're part of this whole pedophile. Well, I'm not going to hold my breath, because I think I'd pass out first before they ever actually do get indicted and arrested and tried. But I'd like to believe that actually there is something going on. I mean, we know that there are so many elements out to get Donald Trump, impeach the guy or kill him. He has a lot of enemies out there. You know, the whole Clinton Bush crowd, along with the media and the CIA, the deep state, basically. It would be nice to, have him prove otherwise, but until I start seeing the rotten fruit from the top of the tree start falling, I'm going to have to say that they're just going after the low levels. And the history of any kind of pedophilia investigation in America has all, and pretty much UK and Europe as well, it only goes so far. You know, only the low level types are the ones that actually get arrested. And even though they might talk, because the law enforcement and the judicial system and all the government and all that, at a certain level, they're part of it. So they will make sure that it is repressed, it's suppressed, and basically buried, so that any kind of investigation does not go forward. So, I mean, that's the story of every single pedophile scandal. It's always buried. And yet there's all this evidence. I mean, it's just mounted and mounted over the years. But we don't see prosecution at the higher levels. The people that have been getting away with it are continuing to get away with it.
That's right. So, we don't see investigation. I mean, sometimes we even get, sometimes astonishing revelations in the mainstream media. I mean, I know you've talked a lot about Virginia Roberts. I mean, here's a woman who names people like Prince Andrew. And right. Names Alan Dershowitz. Now, Joachim is an honourable man. I'm an honourable man. We don't know whether Prince Andrew or Alan Dershowitz sexually assaulted Virginia Roberts. We don't know that. We know that she claims they did. They say that they didn't. But the fact that it got out in the public domain that she had named those people. But what we didn't see, and neither Prince Andrew nor Dershowitz could deny what I'm going to say, we never saw a proper investigation of her claims at all. No decent, fair, you know, open investigation into the claims that she made. And that's, of course, what angers people, you know. But I was stunned that these names came out and that she was able to name these people publicly. Like I said, we don't know whether those people are guilty or not. But, yeah, you wonder about Epstein. You know, he served some time. He's on the Virgin Islands now. You wonder, what does he do? What's he up to these days? I mean, these are questions that you think about, Joachim, right? What is Epstein up to these days?
Yeah, that's a curious question. You know, I mean, obviously, that was a CIA Mossad operation. You know, his girlfriend at the time, who was a procurer of these underage kids, Ghislaine Maxwell, her father, of course, was a very famous double agent spy. And Robert Maxwell. And so, you know, it was a very sophisticated, upscale, get the top people kind of blackmail operation. They got the Clintons involved, Kevin Spacey, Prince Andrew. I mean, a lot of pretty big names. Yet no indictments yet. So
no,
we're still waiting on that.
Yeah. And I said, one of the things that might happen, we don't want it to happen, but we've got to watch again. I mean, I know you go into this in the book, and I've been listening to your conversations with other journalists, and it's terrific stuff. I want to give a quick shout out before we do. We're going to run out of time in about 3 minutes, Joachim. Remind our listeners where they need to go to find the book. That's important.
Okay. I am making sure that it is free for the public to have access to, and they can go to this link, url.com/pedoempire. That's one word, P-E-D-O, empire. That's one way to get to the link, and they can read all the completed chapters. I have 12 of them done so far. I've probably got about 11 more to go. And they can also go to my blog site, and that is empireexpose.blogspot.com. So they can go for free and read all my material there. I also have my interviews on my blog site as well. And then they can go to Amazon.com, Kindle, where I have chapters selling for 99 cents a piece. And they're top 10 so far for the last month and a half. They've been running top 10.
It's doing really well. You've not at all. Yeah. You've not at all attempted to profit from it, Joachim. This is of great interest to our listeners. You're not in any way interested in profiting from... You know, I think that authors are entitled to earn for their hard work and for the hours they put in so that they can do more work. But you're pretty adamant that if people want to get it for free, they can get it for free. It's incredibly honourable, that.
Well... This information is so important, and it's so important in my estimation that this is our best shot to bring down this international crime cabal that has been ruling this planet for centuries. This is our best chance because nothing will energize, activate, outrage individuals than knowing what these people in power are doing to our children. Nothing. So if there's ever going to be people getting up from their couch potato asses and actually becoming activists for change and demanding accountability for these murdering perpetrators, it's this. Pedophilia is the Achilles heel of the ruling elite. And that's also why we're seeing all this basically stepping up of the whole North Korea, the whole situation with the Jerusalem and the Middle East. War is coming. The collapse of the economy is coming. The elite pedophiles have planned for it, and they've sped it up because the exposure of this Achilles heel, they know there's going to be a enraged public all around the world. The more people learn about this, the more we can rise up as in solidarity as one to demand accountability. And that's what's coming. I mean, they're saying basically this whole thing with Harvey Weinstein and Spacey and Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose and all the rest of these predators. That's only, you know, with adult women where they've done these terrible things, and that is terrible, but they're saying that that's just a diversion, a wag the dog strategy to actually take away from the reality that they're doing these horrible things to children. My belief is I think that there's going to be more exposure. I mean, obviously my book is going to, I mean, I heavily source my book. When you talk about this kind of, you know, terrible, inhumane stuff, you have to back it up. And so I make sure that my book is thoroughly sourced. And it's going to be the A through Z encyclopedia on modern pedophilia that's ever been written. And when you do this kind of indictment where it's backed up by solid sources, you can't argue that they're not doing this.
Yeah, that's right.
We have the evidence, and now it's time for accountability.
It's time to, it's first of all important to get it to people, to get people to pay attention to it, and to... and then ultimately to do something about it. And I think you're terrific, Joachim. Thanks so much for getting up, for staying up, I should say, in Bali there for us. We're just about to run out of time any second now. The book is Pedophilia and Empire, Satan, Sodomy and the Deep State. We'll put links to it on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/TheRichieAllenShow, and links as well on Twitter. Free if you want it, but you can also get it chapter by chapter for 99 cents. If you can afford to do that, get it chapter by chapter for 99 cents, and encourage Joachim and others like him to continue the work they're doing. Great that Robert David Steele introduced this, Joachim. Thanks so much for coming on, and you've got an open door to come back. So when there's news, when there's breaking information and you want to get it out there, do consider coming back on with us. You'll always be welcome.
Definitely. Thank you, Richie.
It was an honour. Thank you very much. Terrific to have Joachim Hagopian on the line from Bali. Very early in the AM there on Thursday. Amazing guy. Former West Point graduate. Former US Army officer. Clinical psychologist. We could have done an hour talking about his experiences treating those victims of sexual abuse. We might ask him to do that in the very early new year there. Again, links on our Facebook page and Twitter to where you can go and find the book, and the chapters available on Amazon even, 99 cents per chapter. Support this sort of work, by the way, as much as you possibly can, because there ain't too many people out there doing that, putting that amount of man hours into a project like that, the research that goes with it, and it's vitally important. We're out of time, so we're going to say goodbye. We'll speak with you again tomorrow, Thursday, at 7 p.m. UK time. Thanks to Simon for looking after the YouTube channel. Thank you, Simon. Thanks to my old mate, Jean Ann, in Cleggan. We'll be back 7, as I said, tomorrow. Until then, it's bye for me. This is a Wake Up from the Arcade Fire, closing the programme out this Wednesday. See you tomorrow.